This podcast may contain language that's not appropriate for all listeners. Listener discretion is advised. Today we're going over Four Weddings and a Funeral, Sexy Part 7. So if you haven't seen it and you don't want us to ruin it for you, you might want to pass on this one and we'll catch you next time.
Hey, gentle listeners.
Are you ready for One Dry Kiss?
Welcome to Wonder Kiss, our cussy irreverent love letter to rom-coms, where we are doing a fucking series this time. It is Four Weddings and a Funeral.
Not just a series, a fucking series.
A fucking series. Sexy, sultry, seductive, part 7. Four Weddings and a Funeral. Yeah. I am here with the loquacious, tall drink of sexy, seductress water, Miss Tamara Cosio.
And I am here with my co-host, who's not appropriate for all listeners, but still really fun to listen to if she is appropriate, age appropriate for you, Corinne Eddy.
Woohoo! Oh, okay. So, gentle listeners, we had to re-record a little bit of the first part of this intro due to technical difficulties on my end, but this time it was not my fault. This is Corinne speaking. It was not because I didn't press record. It was because my recording device failed. Which, yay. So,
yay.
We're going to rehash
it. I love you, but this is getting real hard to go over and try to do again and like put the oomph in it I did the first time. It's real, real hard. It's trying. I'm trying.
Oh. I feel you because we also had the same thing happen with the episode that we were trying to record of episode 8. So, yay.
Yep.
We're
going
to do the first portion of both ones. Woohoo!
We're on a roll, folks, and not in a good way.
Party, party! And, Tam, I just want to re-share with you a special moment I had last week.
I will try to pretend like I'm hearing it for the first time.
Ooh, like a virgin. Ooh, touched for the very first time.
Oh, now I'm scared because I don't recall exactly what you were talking about, but now I'm a little nervous.
So there's something funky going on with the bridge. I came hella late to work. I'm supposed to be there at 7:30. I was there a little after 8.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was after the first patient was already in. And in our office, it's me and the boss man. And then there are two people who rent out the third room.
Okay.
When that room is not in use, the door is open. And I got in. I did whatever I needed to do to get ready. And I bustled around. And then it was like 8:15, 8:20. And I realized that the door for the people who work in that third room, the door's closed. And I was like, oh my God, the door's closed. Now, the guy who works on Wednesdays, he's usually not in until about 10 in the morning. And so I was just like, okay. So apparently somebody died in that room and they just never opened the door.
Somebody died in that room.
That was where my mind just went immediately because that obviously is the only reason why that door could be closed that early in the morning.
Right. No, that checks out. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Sure.
I'm not paranoid. There's a reason why I don't watch horror movies. So imagine my surprise when somebody actually hadn't died in that room and it was just the guy coming super early into work.
Did you scream? Is the question when he came out? Were you like, ah! Oh, hi, Steve. Hi. Sorry.
No. I was like, Steve, I thought you were dead. And he's like, wow, way to jump to conclusions there. I was like, no, your door was closed and you're not usually here now. So obviously you were here yesterday and you just died in your room and hadn't opened the door.
How old is Steve?
He's in his like late 50s, early 60s.
Okay. Well, then, if he was like in his 20s, I'd be like, I think you have a problem with anxiety, Corinne. 50s and 60s, I can kind of see where that's not too much of a stretch.
We're almost at our 50s, just FYI.
Shut up. I did not. Nope. And so, guess what happened to me?
Oh, okay. What happened to you?
Just kidding. I was just trying to deter you're talking about our age because I don't want to think about it.
Okay, well, I will loosely call him my coworker, even though, you know, we don't work for each other. but we work in the same space. He wasn't actually super thrilled about me thinking that he had died in the room, and that was like where my brain immediately went when the door was closed on the room. But
I could see how that would be upsetting. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm going to swiftly switch to a different topic, a happier topic, a topic of joy. You see, Tam.
Yeah.
We are not sponsored by them, but I get boxes from Hungry Root. It's kind of like having Trader Joe's come in a box where they're like, here, you can put these three things together and they will make a delicious meal in 5 to 10 minutes. So
if Hungry Root is like Trader Joe's, I will get it immediately because, as you know, and I complain loudly every time it's brought up, my Trader Joe's are 9 to 11 miles away. So I am not close by one. And if I can get Trader Joe's deliciousness coming to my door, I'd be a happy, happy girl.
Yes. And you should be a happy, happy girl. So part of the delivery is like you have these like suggested dinners or lunches or whatever meals that you can have, and you select which ones you want, and they come with like different grocery kind of things. And then you can also get like different snackies and yogurts and different things like that. And so I picked dessert as something that I liked when they were asking me what I liked. And so usually they give me like a bunch of different desserts, and I'm like, no, 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 no. And then I get points that I put towards other things. But I usually like get like one or two little special treats with each box. Little surprise, if you will.
Uh-huh.
And in this box, there were peach rings. Because I saw the peach rings and I was like, you know what? I think I might like to try those peach rings. And so peach ring, peach ring, peach ring. And so I went ahead and I got them. Let me tell you, Dan, they are so delicious. I've been savoring them over the past 2 weeks because...
What kind of peach rings are they?
Smart Sweets. Smart Sweets peach rings.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. I'm pretty sure I've seen those at Target.
Yeah, Smart Sweet Rings. Yes. So I'm glad that you said that because now I'm going to go to Target and just be like, give me all your peach rings, please. Thank you very much.
Are they better than Nerds Clusters?
Yes, they are totally better than Nerds Clusters, and I will tell you why.
Bite your tongue. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, I love Nerds Clusters. I have a passion for Nerds Clusters. Same. But every time I eat Nerds Clusters, I think, am I going to die from eating all of the sugar?
And artificial colors and flavorings.
Deliciousness.
That are delicious.
Yes. Yeah. And when I eat the Smart Sweet peach rings, I do not think, am I going to die from eating all the sugar? Because there's like no sugar or it's very low sugar. I don't know, but it tastes delicious. And I don't eat it and think, boy, there's a lot of fake sweetener in this. I just eat it and think, yum, I hope this doesn't give me the shits later.
A valid concern, yes.
Yes.
Especially with artificial sweetener, sugar alcohol, alcohol sugar.
Yes. So all I'm saying is you're going to have to try them because they have changed my life and I may become a peach ring junkie from them. Just saying.
Nice. Peach ring junkie. Mm-hmm. And hopefully it won't send you to the streets with your peach ring addiction.
Well, I feel like you're all in charge of everything because you have finally conquered all of your cravings.
No, I haven't. If you're talking about my newfangled drug that I started today, absolutely not. Yes, dear listeners, I have joined millions of others and I have jumped on the Ozempic train. I am not one of those people that's going to lie about it or shame anybody for taking it.
No.
I've always had difficulty with my weight ever since I was younger. Not too terribly bad, but of course, naturally it's getting harder as I get older.
Sure.
And so my doctor made me jump through all these hoops, diet and exercise, and then she gave me these other two drugs that sometimes contribute to weight loss when taken together. Not in my case. Thanks, doc. So I had to do that for 3 months, and then when that didn't work, she finally said, okay, we'll start you on Ozempic, which I took today, and I've got the weirdest side effect.
Ooh, do tell.
I got such bad muscle cramps. Like my back hurt like somebody was taking body shots to my kidneys.
No.
And that went on for a couple of hours. I know. Right after I injected myself. And then after I laid down, because thankfully I didn't go to work today, I laid down for a bit. And then it felt like I did 3,000 sit-ups. It was the weirdest thing, and supposedly it's not a common side effect with Ozempic. And so then I freaked out for like a half hour going, did I inject myself wrong? Did I hit a nerve? What happened? And of course, my mind...
Oh, I know what happened.
My mind... Somebody died behind the door. We're coming from the same place. Like, this worst case scenario.
Look, the magic school bus is traveling through your body right now, okay?
Great. Miss Frizzle, can you just scoop up all that fat on your way out and put it on the bus and just, you know, fly right out of my ass? Thanks. That'd be great. So
I feel like you're denying my Miss Frizzle hypothesis.
I wouldn't be surprised. Weirder things have happened, honestly, at this point. But my body does freaky things when I start medication. Always has. Mm-hmm. Just like there's a day of adjustment, and today was my day of adjustment. And of course, once I calmed down and didn't think I was dying, I Googled side effects. And even though that is not a common side effect, I saw many, many women on Reddit that suffered the same things. And some of them had to stop taking it because it was so bad. So hopefully that's not me. Fingers crossed. Oof. It's only day one, and already I'm like, sweet baby Jesus. It's I'm not going to be one of those people that's able to take it because, Lord have mercy, I have some weird side effect to it. So there was that. That was my excitement. So that's it. Muscle cramps, body shots in the kidney, sit-up stomach, and I'm still hungry. Some people say that your appetite goes away immediately. I'm on the half dose, though, so they could see how things progress before I go into the full dose. And I'm like, oh, my God, if this gets worse, I don't know what.
Well, at least you're going to look amazing while you're doing it.
Well, you would think. Appetite's still there. I'm going to be hunched over like an old crone. Gentle listeners, if you have also had weird side effects from taking any kind of medication, doesn't have to be Ozempic, I would like to hear from you. I need people to pool around me that have had similar experiences so I don't feel like such a gosh darn cautionary tale.
You're talking about being hunched over like an old crone, or you could have been going to the Tyra Banks School of Modeling and you could just be looking very chic.
Fall into those weird poses. Just yes. Like, oh no, this is, I meant to do this. Oh,
by the way, I actually have something fresh and exciting for your ears. Just a second.
Are you going to show me some more Keith Haring Crocs?
No.
Keith Haring track pants like that girl that you ambushed at Chipotle. What the hell? What the hell? Is that a water? What is that? Corinne is showing me a foam unicorn head. It looks like a dispenser of some kind, but she's got it so goddamn close to the screen that it is either a unicorn she could ride on. Oh, it's a pool noodle. Good Lord.
With a tail.
With the tail, with the rainbow tail. She's got a unicorn-headed pool noodle with a rainbowy tail. If that doesn't have Corinne written all over it, I don't know what does.
Tam, this is for you.
What?
Because I got a pool noodle.
Uh-huh.
This is what they had, okay? It's the end of the season. So I got a pool noodle so that I could put protective covers over my vampire killing spiky things so that when you come and visit me, you will not have to worry. The only pool noodles I could find had heads of things on them and tails of things. So
you're going to cut apart that magnificent beast?
I'm going to decapitate the unicorn for the safety of our friendship.
You got to mount it on your wall like a, you know, a trophy head.
Yes.
I thought you were going to keep it. I was impressed. But now that I know you're just going to butcher it to fix your chairs, it makes me a little bit sad.
Like the unicorn head, it's like foam or something like that. But it's like the size of my head.
It is. That's why I was so like, is that a did you get like one of those stick ponies that you ride along when you're a kid? Which is what it really looks like, but with a really fat, fat stick.
Yes. Well, you know, I was thinking about shooting a little video of me doing like hobby horse action with the pool noodle unicorn.
I think that's a great idea.
Yeah.
I think the world needs to see that.
Mm-hmm.
And you're cuddling with it. Like you're going to maim that thing, but you're over there like snuggling with it and rubbing the tail lovingly over your cheek.
Look.
I think you need to keep that.
Patrice the unicorn.
Patrice. Okay.
She's going to sacrifice herself on the altar so that you will not get skewered by the arms of my comfy chairs.
Corinne, I know I have vertigo, but I do know how to walk. So there's that.
You yourself said you were like, those chairs are going to maim me.
If I lived there, they would. If I visited, I'd probably be staying like far across the room from them. Why don't you come sit next to me? No, I'm okay over here. You're on the floor. Yeah, that's fine. Far, far away from those vampire chairs.
You're going to be like army crawling through my apartment. So you'll be like under the chair, pokey arm parts. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Why are you doing that? Because it's safe down here. I'm in the bubble. Leave me alone.
The rest of the time you spend standing in the kitchen being like, no, I'm cool. I'm just standing here. It's fine.
Holding a knife in case it comes after me. Just in case. Just a little extra protection. You got pokey things, cheer. I got pokey things.
You want to see who's going to win? Oh, yeah.
No, the chair would. I know it.
So, Miss Tamara, please gather all your remaining oomph, because I know you've had a hell of a week, to refresh our memories on episode 6.
Let's see. Synopsis. Well, Craig finally found Izara. Not that her location was secret. She was at the Love Chalet, Britain's hashtag number one reality show. But after she got proposed to by Garrett, she realized Craig was the one for her. So he totally wasn't off base when he thought she was sending him secret messages through the TV. And they're getting married! Yay! And of course they couldn't just have any normal ceremony. Due to Zara's new reality stardom, Love Chalet and Hotels.com agreed to pay for the whole thing as long as it was coordinated and recorded by them. So romantic.
So romantic.
At the ceremony, Duffy, who found Maya's love letter in his jacket pocket, decides to profess his love for her during his best man speech.
Don't do it.
No one thought that was a good idea. Yeah. Nobody. But thankfully, it didn't happen because he figured out that Maya loved Cash, not him. Maya finally admitted to Cash during the wedding reception that she had feelings for him, a.k.a. her bestie's ex who left her bestie at the altar. Ooh. Which sent Cash over the moon because the feeling was mutual. But Maya assured him she would never, ever, 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 ever act on those feelings. And speaking of besties, where was Ainsley during all the wedding madness while she was still boycotting Craig because he remained friends with Cash? So the night of Craig's wedding, she busied herself at a job that she had to do, serious air quotes, while papering the living room of an oil tycoon whose condo she was decorating, because everyone knows that the best time to wallpaper a house is on Saturday evenings. That's when contractors are at their busiest, right, Corinne?
Oh, yeah. You know, why go out, like, to the club? Well, actually, I would rather wallpaper a room at this point than go to the club, but yes.
The oil tycoon, who we dubbed Tony 3, but whose real name was Bryce, talked Ainsley into going to Craig and Zara's wedding because friends show up for each other. So in the end, everyone was together for Craig and Zara's wedding.
Yay!
Ainsley and Craig reconciled while Duffy and Maya's relationship was split apart by an imagined betrayal on Duffy's part. An added bonus, Ainsley picked up Garrett, Zara's slighted fiancé from Love Chalet, at the wedding reception and took him home because the best way to get over a man is to get under one. Heyo! So, Corinne, now that I have thoroughly gone over last week's episode, do you want to dive right into 4 Weddings and a Funeral, Sexy Part 7?
Yes. You mean Sexier Part 7? Yes.
Oh, sexier, of course.
Sexier. We're in a cute theater and hear the strains of kids singing so long, farewell, au revoir, auf Wiedersehen, and we see the community theater's rehearsal of The Sound of Music. Cash standing stage right as the Von Trapp children, much more diverse than the actual Von Trapp children, sing and dance. The young woman playing Liesel approaches Cash Von Trapp, and because that's what I'm calling him. Calling him Cash Von Trapp. It's cool.
Fitting.
Yes. And sings, I'd like to stay and drink my first champagne. Yes. Cash Von Trapp says sternly, no. Steps forward and his foot breaks through the stage floor. Shit, he exclaims and immediately apologizes to the children for cussing. But his language is the least of their problems. The community theater is falling apart and Mrs. Ollie states, This is going to have to be our last production. A very dramatic middle school-aged girl begs, No, you can't do that. Without the theater, I will absolutely drop out of school, become pregnant, and do drugs. Cash rolls his eyes. That's a little over the top, but we do need this theater. It's an important part of our community. I've got an idea of how we can save it. The girl states, Is it a bake sale? Because we'll barely recoup the cost of ingredients. Cash states, It's not a bake sale. And then whispers to Mrs. Ollie's ear, It was a bake sale, but I'll think of something else. That was so cute.
The financial wizard thinks of a bake sale to raise money, really?
Exactly. He's like, We have these candy bars where you can go door to door.
Yes. No, Cash.
Later, Cash and Bash are hanging out together, and Bash tries to break his curse your sudden but inevitable betrayal, trail to Cash. Mm. Bruv, I have something to tell you that's going to rock the foundation of our relationship. Cash looks over at him and states, I know you're dating Fatima, Bash. It's all over your Instagram. It's okay. But Rashir looks relieved and then worried again. I know you have feelings. So hit me with your car or something. Cash says, I'm not hitting you with my car. We're all good. But if you really want to make it up to me, you'll come out to the theater and sort out the sound and light board. It's a hot mess. A look of fear passes over Bashir's face. Are you sure you wouldn't just rather hit me with a car? Cash stares at him and Bash relents. Okay, I'll look at it.
And Maya has been a-struggling. She's met with a very unhinged-looking Duffy to try and explain things to him. He's a bitter Betty, and his floppy hair is somehow floppier in his unbalanced state. But he agrees not to say anything about her love for Cash. However, when she congratulates him on his New Yorker piece, he stares at her angrily, pours his beer into a thermos, and leaves. Can you drink in public in London?
I don't know, but if it's in a thermos, then who's going to know?
It's a clear thermos, and it was very obviously beer. Not many
pee.
Drinks are... Oh. Yeah, I guess pee would be probably more legal to drink while walking down the street than alcohol. I'm not sure what that looks like. Anyways. At her job, Maya struggles to write speeches that go against her core values, and she has a phone meeting with a recruiter. And can we talk about this restroom scene? Because Maya, not loving her job with Aldridge. So she sneaks into the toilet and tries to call a recruiter while on the toilet in hushed tones until somebody walks in. And then she says, oh, shit. And the recruiter on the other line says, that's okay. Most 60% of our calls are made from bathrooms. Some people on the down low. And I was like, oh, Jesus. Oh, I thought that was cute. Anyways, the recruiter assures Maya that they will likely be able to find a different job for her, which can't come soon enough for her, seeing as how she was recently touted for one of her speeches on an alt-right website.
Yay!
On top of it all, Ainsley's been fucking around with Garrett, so Maya gets the privilege of seeing a naked Garrett first thing in the morning and hearing him spout such wisdom as, Maya, I was thinking about it, and I realized that you and Maya Angelou both have the same first name.
What?
Ainsley explains, Garrett's really good at figuring out what famous person shares your first name, until Maya asks him, okay, what about Ainsley? Which crushes poor little Garrett's same name ego.
Aww.
And he putters off. But we all get a good gander at his backside as he goes. His naked backside. Craig and Zara, nay, Zrag, return home from the 2-week Antarctica vacation. And apparently thought it would be a good idea for Duffy to house it for them. There are dirty dishes, beer, wine, and seemingly everything alcohol-related that comes in a bottle, empty everywhere. Duffy looks unhinged per usual. Zara is understandably not happy about the state of their apartment, and Craig is more concerned about his friend asking, oh, is this about Maya? Duffy looks wild-eyed at Zreg and says, "There's things you don't know about Maya." Craig says, "Okay, what?" Zara and Craig look expectantly at Duffy, and Duffy realizes he can't say anything about Cash. But even if he did, that's only one thing, and she didn't do anything. So instead he says, "Never mind," and then takes absolutely no responsibility for the mess he's made, complaining, "This isn't my fault. Your housekeeper quit because she said I was bumming her out. I gotta go to work. I'm running late. Sorry I drank all your alcohol and broke your computer with the virus from porn. Bye."
Oh my gosh. What a fucking nightmare. Can you even imagine? He knows they're coming home. It's not a surprise. And he fucking leaves the apartment like that?
He is not exercising good judgment at the moment. Corinne, I don't know if you know this. And apparently one heartbreak from Maya, which is so... Duffy was like, "I'm fine if you want to just be friends." And she's like, "Great, let's just be friends." And he seemed okay with that. And then when he found the love letter, it somehow like reverberated in the back of his mind where he just like became some love hungry fool that had to have her. And so when it was unrequited, he went off the fucking deep end like nobody's business. And it makes no sense unless he was full of shit the first time he said he was perfectly fine with them just being friends.
Well, he wasn't perfectly fine with them just being friends. He was totally full of shit about that.
He wasn't acting unhinged, though. He was being like, "I'm going to be a respectable distance, a respectable friend," yeah, and like, you know, not fucking tear people's houses, drink all their alcohol and wreck their computers with porn type of crazy.
Yeah. No, that was... Duffy is lacking some major judgment points.
Yep. Yep. Yep.
And we get to see even more examples of that coming up. It's so exciting.
Whoa, it gets better? I mean, worse? Great. Let's find out together, shall we?
Oh my gosh. And actually, this, I have an example right here in my section.
Okay.
And while Zara and Craig get to literally clean up Duffy's unhinged state in their house, Gemma sees evidence of it in Giles' Latin exam. At first, she's proud of Giles for getting an A, and then she looks at his Latin test and reads questions such as, "Brad Pitt played Achilles in what film?" and "What is your name in pig Latin?" She scoffs at the questions, asking, "What idiot teacher gave you a test like this?" Her brain hamster churning away when suddenly the realization hits her. Fucking Duffy.
Wow, that's the kind of education you get at Peace Boys School? Nice.
Oh my gosh. It's like when my mom read one of my papers that I got a good grade on, and she's like, "What's this quote here?" And I was like, "Oh, I made it up." And she's like, "Uh-huh. That's what I thought. Okay."
And the teacher bought it.
Yep. Gemma goes down to the school and approaches Duffy after class. She confronts him, asking, "What's going on here?" Duffy belligerently says, "Chill out, dude. I'm going through something right now." Gemma retorts, "I will not chill out, dude. I do not pay a small fortune so that Giles can sit in class and hear his teacher complain about how women hate him. These kids are counting on you, and you are letting them down with your incredibly lackluster instruction at this moment in time." Duffy runs his hands through his fucked up hair. It is all sorts of all over the place. It's not quite Albert Einstein level, but I mean, he's just a few incidents away from Albert Einstein level hair.
It's getting close.
Yeah.
It's getting pretty close.
Yeah. And he says, "Sorry about that. Maybe you can transfer him to St. I don't give a shit. I hear they have a great Latin department." Gemma has had enough and she turns on her heel and walks the fuck out of there as Duffy calls after her, "Gemma, wait, sorry about that."
Yeah, see, I don't like Gemma's. Well, I'll get into it later. Anyways, that evening, Ainsley, Tony 2, and Maya are out at a subtly named GAY club.
Gay bar, gay bar, gay bar. Ding, 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 ding,
ding, ding, ding, ding. Ainsley and Maya are exchanging some girly bonding talk at the bar when Maya sees her boss man, Andrew Alridge, down at the end of the bar and exclaims, "Oh my God, Andrew!" Ainsley rolls her eyes. "You gotta stop talking about your boss, Maya." And she clarifies, no, he's here. At that moment, Andrew sees her and pops over to say hi. He warmly approaches Maya Ainsley, and by that point, Tony, too, has joined the party. He introduces himself to Ainsley, and when he turns towards Tony, too, Tony, too, cuts him off. I know who you are. Andrew proudly states, well, yes, it's me, Andrew Ulrich, the first openly gay MP in my party. It's quite a long story if we had time. He trails off briefly before quickly launching into, the year was 2002. Nicole Kidman was about to win the Oscar for Hours, in case you're curious. Tony, too, once again cuts him off. That's the problem. It was 2002. Since coming out, you've completely forgotten about people like me. Andrew is indignant. Good sir, you're mistaken. My voting record is impeccable. Tony, too, agrees. Yes, on issues like cutting inheritance tax for millionaires and keeping Britain British. You've been brave once, but now you only help rich, old, white people. You're a gay dinosaur. That's why everyone calls you LGBT Rex.
Oh, that's so good. That line is so good. LGBT Rex.
Andrew responds, that's enough. I will not be talked down by a man in a mesh top. Maya, who's been watching the entire exchange, says swiftly, okay, I think we've learned a lot here at GAY, and now Ainsley and I will be saying BYE. Maya grabs a protesting Ainsley and hustles for the exit door. Andrew and Tony, too, stare at each other next to the crowded dance floor. Tony, too, has been glaring at Andrew, states, you don't remember me, do you?
Ooh.
Andrew responds glibly, no. Tony, too, follows up. Halloween 2 years ago, I was Brittany, slave for you era, and you were Richard Gere, an officer and a gentleman. You kept your socks on.
Ooh.
Tony flicks his eyes down to Andrew's feet and continues making steady, intense eye contact with him. I thought we had a nice time, but I guess it's too much to ask for someone like you to remember somebody like me. Andrew looks puzzled as the lights from the club flash over his face and the dance music booms in the background. And he is alone, alone, alone.
Aww.
I really wish I didn't do the accents for those two bastards, because that's going to be hard.
That's okay. There is plenty of me doing bad accents.
See, but then there's the distinction between haughty, posh, British politician and street smart Tony, too, who doesn't take any shit.
Yes. So it's no surprise that when that Monday at work, Andrew calls Maya and Marcus into his office and waves a meme on his laptop in front of the duo. It's of a T-Rex with Andrew's face as its head, and across the top, the words LGBT Rex in bold letters. He demands, why is this happening? You're supposed to stop things like this from happening. You're supposed to keep me awoken.
Yeah, with the truth, it's where.
For me, if I had the honor of being called LGBT Rex, I would blow up a picture and have it framed, personally.
I would lean into it, yeah. I'd have t-shirts made. I'd have those inflatable dinosaur costumed people at all my speeches.
Yes!
With, we're holding rainbow flags. It'd be glorious.
It'd be so glorious. I'm very excited about our vision, and I feel like we're very on the same page with each other. So, Marcus tentatively corrects, I believe you meant woke. Andrew continues, do I? How dare he suggest I only help people like me? How do you explain my support for the Women's Flower Club or the Children's Library Bus? Do I look like a woman or a child, Tony?
Women really need flower clubs, yeah.
I know.
It's a necessary part of the community. Andrew, good job.
Let's think about the women who are going to this flower club and how much money they might have.
I'm thinking they'd probably be along the Gemma line.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Gemma. Yeah. Yeah.
Gemma and above.
Although he does do get props for the children's mobile library. We'll thumbs up that one, but
yeah.
Andrew emphatically closes his laptop as Marcus corrects, it's Marcus.
Oh, yes, because he said Tony, didn't he? He said Tony at the end of that rant.
Yes, he
did. Oh, somebody got under his skin. Mm-hmm. Somebody got under that lily white skin of his.
I mean, look, Tony is tall, dark, and handsome. And the fact that Andrew does not remember hooking up with Tony, ouch. And also having that tall, dark handsomeness come at you. Yeah, I would remember that too.
I was going to say, maybe his Britney Slave for You costume was really, really good. maybe he looked more like Britney and less like Tony. It was Halloween, in Andrew's defense.
Truth. And I am sure that he was wearing a fantastic wig. Maya knows what he's talking about, or at least part of it, and cautiously inputs, I can't speak for Tony, but maybe he's referring to your party's less than progressive stance on everything. Andrew sighs. Oh, I just hate for anyone to think that I'm the bad guy. I'm not the bad guy. I voted for Black History Week. Maya corrects. Month, he reels. A whole month? And then recovers. Well, that's wonderful. Maya seizes the opportunity and says, I'm thrilled that you're concerned about this. I'd love to help you change your image. Andrew asks, what would you suggest? And Marcus chimes in, oh, you could pair your suits with a snazzy pair of sneakers. Maya glares at him and course corrects, or you could show your support for a cause that people wouldn't expect from you, like an at-risk youth program or a woman's shelter. Andrew is intrigued. Ooh, good idea. Compile a list. Marcus chimes in more helpfully this time. What about the community theater in Hounslow? Now, gentle listeners, he knows of the theater because Cash created a GoFundMe video for it, sent the link to Maya, among other people, and Maya's been watching the videos of the kids singing Doe a Deer over and over again, driving Marcus a bit bonkers. Maya gets a panicked look on her face. What? No, I don't think that's a good idea. But Andrew's ears perk up at Marcus's suggestion and asks for more details. Marcus explains, it's a bunch of poor, ethnically diverse kids doing the Sound of Music. Hindus, Muslims, girls in headscarves, risking everything to sing. Think of the photo op. Oh,
cringe.
Andrew grins gleefully. Sounds perfect. Maya adds, or I could come up with other options. Marcus blurts out, she's just jealous because she didn't think of it. And Andrew doubles down. This is perfect. The children are in need. Well done, Marcus. And Marcus looks smugly triumphant, while Maya is all full of, oh, shit. So much for no longer being involved with Cash.
What exactly are the kids risking to sing in that community theater?
Because they're escaping from the Nazis.
Oh, but it's a play. It's not. Yes. Real life. Okay. All right. Anyways, flash forward to a very frustrated Cash trying to go through lighting cues with Bashir, who's too busy texting with Fatima, causing Cash to yell, "Oi! Stop texting Fatima so we can get through the light cues." Bash responds, I knew it. Get that anger out, bruv. It's okay to be mad at me because I'm dating Fatima. Cash rolls his eyes. I'm fine with you dating Fatima. I'm not okay with it taking an hour to get through 5 lighting cues. Bash reflects and nods his head. Fair, but does not stop being utterly distracted on his phone. Off in the wings of the stage, Cash hears a familiar voice. Maya? And lo and behold, Maya's appearing unexpectedly along with Andrew Ulrich, Marcus, and Miss Ali. Miss Ali explains that they lost their funding a couple of years ago and they haven't been able to raise enough to repair the theater. Marcus whispers in Aldridge's ear, you voted to cut their funding a couple years ago. Andrew side-eyes Marcus and says, oh, that's just heartbreaking. I'd like to fund the renovation of the entire theater. Maya balks silently as she sees a future of much more interaction with the community theater and Cash. Andrew looks happily around the theater and says, how does the Andrew Ulrich Hounslow Community Theater sound? Marcus helpfully chimes in, or should it be the Andrew Ulrich Ethnically Diverse Community Theater for Low-Income Urchins? Andrew, ever the politician, knows that she shouldn't use that as the theater name, although it does have a certain ring to it and resonance for him. As Andrew, Marcus, and Miss Ali walk off to do a theater tour, Cash approaches Maya. Oh my gosh, thank you so much for this. I thought that after what happened at the wedding, I'd never see you again. Maya's nonplussed and says through gritted teeth, believe me, I had nothing to do with us being here. This is literally the last place on earth I want to be. Just then, their conversation is interrupted by Andrew asking, "Do you two know each other?" Maya says, "No," and Cash says, "Yeah, we have mutual friends." Andrew forges on, delighted. "Oh, well, that's great. Maya, you can be the point person and liaise with the theater to help get everything done, including handling the press around my benevolent work." Maya tries to gracefully decline. "Oh, this is Marcus's project. He should really be the point person." Andrew tisks Maya. "You already know someone here. Plus, given the optics, you'd be a better choice." Maya glares at him with a, "Seriously, you want me to be your token person of color look?" And Marcus calls it, "Are you saying I'm too white?" Andrew turns to Marcus. "Legally, I'm not allowed to say that." Then says in a hushed tone, "But yes, that's exactly what I'm saying."
Oh, you, that gave me so much joy. I've just been waiting for you to say that line because I knew you would say it perfectly.
I hurt my throat saying it perfectly.
Oh, the things we do for you, gentle listeners. At Peeth School for Boys, Duffy continues to look unhinged. But thanks to the presence of Tabby in his classroom, his tirades against women have stopped. And he's actually teaching Latin. However, he is also exceedingly frustrated because Tabby is correcting all of his pronunciations. So, after class, when he sees Gemma across the lawn as she is waiting for Giles, he runs down the school steps, across the lawn, and hops over several short hedges while yelling, "What is Duffy yelling?" Any thoughts, Tam?
Well, if I had anything to say about it, he would be saying, "I am the man-child, Prissy Peeth, school instructor, whose point of view on love is as unhinged as my hair after a week-long bender. Women, stay away from me if you value your sanity."
Amazing.
If I was a writer, that's what he'd say.
And we can find out how correct Tamara is after the break. And we're back. Unfortunately, what Tamara said does not happen, but it should. It totally should.
In our hearts and minds, it does.
Yes. Always in our hearts and minds. Instead, he says, "You narc! You narc!" And I don't know if the Brits know what a narc is, but Duffy continues using another slang term, one of which I didn't understand, because apparently it's a UK slang, which means essentially narc or snitch. He says, "You grassed on me!" I was like, "Heh?"
Grassed on me?
Grassed! You grassed on me! Yeah.
How is that? How did that phrase come into being? Do you know?
I have no idea. I also kind of wonder where the word narc came from. But yeah, no.
Narcotics officers, because if you were selling drugs or dealing drugs,
right,
oftentimes a narcotics officer would arrest you or tell on you or whatnot.
And it has transcended narcotics into other things. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right.
Yeah. No, but grassed on me? No idea. Gentle listeners, if you know how that term came about, please let us know. I just looked it up because I was like, what the fuck is he saying? And yeah, it's a UK term. So he yells at Gemma, "You grassed on me to the headmaster, and he now has Tabby spying on my ass." Gemma says tersely, "Well, she's obviously not doing a very good job because you still appear to be unhinged and unwashed." Duffy self-righteously declares as he points his finger at her, "I'm sorry, I just lost my girlfriend, and you of all people should understand. He's a baby man, he's a baby man."
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Gemma's eyes flare wide open and she unleashes, "Are you taking the piss?" She shoves Duffy and he falls, surprised, onto the ground on his back.
Like a turtle.
Yes, very much like a turtle. She looms over him saying, "Quentin was my husband and he died. I have eggs in my refrigerator that have lasted longer than your relationship. You're a hungover 30-year-old man in stained trousers who doesn't like his life. You can blame Maya, Tabby, or me, but the real person you should be blaming is yourself. Guess who needs to look at the man in the mirror.
Mm-hmm.
Duffy. Yes. And I say this as your friend. Get your shit together. And she leaves in a huff.
Gemma is slowly but surely growing on me. First, yes. It was sneaking the cigarette and then taking pulls from the vodka bottle right on the dance floor. And now she's telling Duffy exactly what everybody else is thinking.
Uh-huh. Gemma wins my heart when she's first like, you've got to be fucking kidding me over the test. And she goes to talk mm-hmm. to him. And then she's like, I'm not even arguing with your sorry ass. And she just leaves.
Mm-hmm.
And after she reads him, and then he's like, he comes back for seconds. He's like, please, man, may I have more? And she's like, you want more? I'll fucking give you more.
Yeah. It's like somebody saying to somebody who'd lost their arm, like, I've got a paper cut. And she's like, really, fucker? You want to talk about paper cuts when I don't have an arm over here? Screw you.
Like, Gemma, we need to bring that kind of Gemma energy into our life. What she's throwing down in these situations.
Oh, but I have. All will be revealed shortly, gentle listeners. I just have to get through this next couple of weeks.
We're all just seeing how the cards play out.
Yeah. Let's let the chips fall where they may. And then when they do, I'll tell you all about it. Anywho. Back to the show. Change is happening in the Fearsome Foursomes universe, and while we don't know where Craig or Ainsley is at this point, Duffy has finally taken a shower, shaved, and apologized to Tabby in an excellent turn of events when he says, I guess we're both single now. She casually says, oh no, I'm dating someone, another American, and he's an author. Duffy's eyes get a tinge of, what, jealousy? As he asks, anyone I would have heard of? Tabby brusquely responds, oh, probably not. He does mostly romances. A car drives up. She gets in. And as it begins to drive away, we see the license plate that says N Sparks. What? Take that, Duffy. Because that is N Sparks as in Nicholas Sparks or Nicholas Notebook, A Walk to Remember, or Dear John Sparks.
Mm-hmm.
Surely you've heard of one of those books and or movies. Meanwhile, Maya's icy demeanor is melting towards Cash, and she's having a bit of an emotional affair with him, telling Ainsley she's working late and then spending extra time with Cash in the theater while she helps out. The community theater is changing as well, with new seating, a new stage, a beautiful panoramic background for the Sound of Music production, and then there's Andrew Ulrich, who shows up at Tony Two's workplace, aka Ainsley's shop, and apologizes to Tony Two? What? Tony Two raises an eyebrow and says, apologize for what? Brexit? Cutting the arts? Fracking? That waistcoat? Andrew happens to be very proud of his vintage waistcoat that he has been able to fit in since his college days, but Tony Two is not impressed.
Mm.
Andrew, more specifically, apologizes for not remembering Tony too, and explains that in his circle, dating and relationships are hard to do, especially when you're, you know, gay. He asks Tony too if he wants to go to the Sound of Music opening night with him, but Tony too scoffs. Stop. You don't really want to date me. You just want to make yourself feel better, and I'd rather you left me out of it. Andrew apologizes and promises not to bother him again and retreats in a little huff.
In a huff.
It's a sad huff, like odd shucks huff.
In a huff.
And I'm guessing it's a Friday and Zara, Craig, Duffy, Maya, Tony Two, and Gemma are all gathered at Ainsley's to ostensibly see their honeymoon photos, but instead they're treated to porno snaps from Heathrow when they're waiting for their plane. Wow.
and what they is referring to Craig and Zara. Sorry, that's my bad writing. Yes.
Oh, Craig and Zara getting it on at the airport because they couldn't wait to get naked and get it on their way to Antarctica. Probably because it would have been too cold to have sex in the
Seriously?
North Pole. Or is it the South Pole?
South
One
Pole.
Of the poles. Duffy enters the room remarking, oh, hey, it's Craig's ass. I feel like we're roommates again. And now we know that Tamara was right. They were roommates just a different year than when Maya hooked up with his roommate after watching Love and Basketball. See episode 1 and/or 2.
Yeah.
Craig checks out Duffy, whose hair is under control, and he's wearing a lovely sports jacket, sweater, and pants. Definitely pants. And declares, "Why are you looking so good? That's my brand. Step off. I'm the best dressed one in this friend group." Jeffy. Oh, my God. Their joint name. Gemma looks at Duffy, perhaps with heart eyes.
If they ever become a couple, they will be Jeffy.
Oh, God. No. Gemma, only Gemma, says, "Well, I think you look great." And the two smile at each other. Meanwhile, Maya's in the kitchen, this time not making a tequila-rita, when Tony, too, approaches her and totally casually, hashtag not casually, says, "So, how's Andrew doing?" Maya confirms, "He's good. You made quite an impression on him." Tony, too, rolls his eyes. "Ugh, doubtful." Maya doubles down. "You totally did. He doesn't listen to a word I say, but after he spoke with you, he sponsored a community theater in Hounslow. It would have closed if it weren't for him. He's renovating the entire theater, and they're doing a production of The Sound of Music. I've been super busy facilitating the renovation and press around it all." You can see Tony Two's brain hamster connecting the dots between Andrew inviting him to The Sound of Music and his most recent charitable project. Ainsley walks into the kitchen, pours herself a glass of wine, and insists, "Enough about Andrew. This project has stolen you from me. You've been working like 80 hours a week, and last week I found myself nostalgically smelling your sweater." Maya and Ainsley laugh over this, but then Maya looks off in the distance with a heavy heart because she's got, secrets. Oh. Has she told Ainsley that Cash happens to be a star in the play and that community theater is putting on? Nope.
Oof. Curse your sudden but inevitable betrayal on that one. Sweet sassy.
Curse your upcoming but hasn't. Oh, wait. Upcoming, yeah. Once you find out about it, but it's currently happening. So it is inevitable betrayal.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. It's inevitable. It just hasn't. She doesn't realize it yet. Yes.
Curse your ongoing.
Yes.
But inevitable betrayal.
Ongoing and inevitable betrayal. Yes. Absolutely. And inevitably revealed betrayal. There we go.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's
ongoing
good.
Ongoing,
yeah,
and inevitably good. Revealed betrayal. Oof.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Ainsley, who after finishing designing the bachelor pad, has been hired to redecorate Tony Thrice Bryce's backyard. And we're not talking about his hiney.
Tony Thrice.
They're at the Arboretum, with Ainsley asking Thrice Bryce what plants resonate with him. They're vibing and chatting, and then they both share their first kiss stories. Thrice Bryce says that his was at a Cracker Barrel. Ainsley laughs. "That is so Texas, but mine is even more. It was the back of a pickup truck after a football game, and I got chiggers." They both chuckle, and then Thrice Bryce looks at Ains, and Ains looks at him. "And I would say that there was a kiss tractor beam between them, but honestly, Hallmark movies have more heat in them than that kiss between those two that was shared."
What?
Mm. Maybe you felt like the passions. Did you feel the passions?
I would say it was up there with the Hallmark kiss. I wouldn't say it was lesser than a Hallmark kiss.
Okay. Fair. I know it was supposed to be a sweet moment, but it just felt awkward and gave me the ick.
I love how when you explain this portion, you get a little bit of a southern twang in your narration. It's supposed to be a sweet moment, but I could tell it was awkward.
I'm blaming it on Thrice Bryce, okay?
Okay.
Ainsley pulls away and says, "I can't." She does not say "I can't," because I'm puzzled by Ainsley because she does not have any kind of southern accent at all. I'm just saying. She says, "I can't. I'm seeing someone right now. The bronzer poisoned Garrett. And I just can't." She leaves Thrice Bryce, who is very confused, but at least he's in an arboretum so he can cry into some plants, wipe his eyes with some leaves, and won't be stuck in traffic car crying.
Unlike us.
Unlike us. Just Thrice Bryce, before you cry and wipe your eyes in those plants, read the label and make sure you're not accidentally poisoning yourself. Okay.
And not wearing any eyeliner or mascara before you cry.
Truth.
Trust me on this one.
The next evening, Thrice Bryce shows up at Ainsley's house. She looks through the peephole and hisses, "Shit, shit, shit," softly to herself, but not softly enough because Thrice Bryce says, I can hear you saying shit, shit, shit. She opens the door and he says, look, I'm sorry I kissed you. I didn't know you were in a relationship. Ainsley doubles down. It's a very serious relationship. Sure, Ains. Sure, he continues. But I did need to tell you I was interested because life is too short not to. It's fine if you're not interested in decorating my backyard, but it was never about the backyard or my honey. It was about you. And he turns around and leaves a stunned Ainsley in her doorway. She's probably about 30 seconds from pouring herself a very large glass of wine and texting Barrett.
Garrett.
Texting Garrett to see if she can get some booty to hopefully expunge Thrice Bryce from her memory.
Meanwhile, Maya's at work and she finds out that Andrew, while he has funded the renovation of the theater, is backing out from being at the opening night because the head guy of his political party doesn't like that Andrew sponsored something in an opposing politician's district. The scandal! Maya tries to get him to come, but to no avail. So she retreats and does a little research. Later, much to Andrew's chagrin, she comes into his office and he says disdainfully, yes, come in. The closed door means nothing. Maya is determined. If you want to fire me, fire me. He interrupts her. You're fired. And Maya continues undeterred. But I just need to tell you one thing first. You made a promise to those kids. You can't do this. He sighs. Do you think I want to do this? I saw that cute little Sikh boy who played Kurt. He kept pushing up his little glasses onto his little nose.
Aww.
Maya pushes. So help him, Andrew replies. There's more at stake. I have my seat to think of. I've been in politics before you were born. You don't even know what a hard choice looks like.
Ooh.
Maya is indignant and says, it is incumbent upon us as public servants to give voice to the voiceless. Andrew righteously says, oh, and who said that? Oprah? Shimon, damn it. It would be easier if I wasn't trying to fake an accent right now.
Chimamunda Ngozi Adichie.
I'm just going to leave you to say that. And Maya and I are surprised. Whoa, you know how to pronounce that? And then refocuses. No, it's not her anyway. She flips open her laptop and presses play on a video clip. We see a young Andrew Aldridge speaking to his colleagues. It is incumbent upon us as a public servant to give voice to the voiceless and to remember that we govern and act on behalf of the people. We must elevate those who cannot rise on their own. I promise to carry out my duties to serve and to represent each and every one of them. Andrew gets a small smile on his face, and you can tell he's feeling a lot of nostalgia. He admits, ugh, you know I can't disagree with that handsome bastard. They both chuckle, and Maya has won this one.
Woo! Woo! We next see Andrew at the ribbon-cutting ceremony for the opening night of the newly renovated theater, and it goes smashingly.
He did show up. He did!
Yes. Later in the lobby, Andrew is speaking to a couple, and then he spies Tony too, who started walking towards Andrew and then froze, turned, and walked over to the snack counter to collect himself and figure out his next move. Andrew politely excuses himself from the conversation and approaches Tony too. Tony turns towards him and apologizes. I'm sorry, I was a basic bitch, but you forgot me so easily and it hurt because I didn't forget you. Andrew concedes, perhaps you were a bit of a basic bitch, but perhaps I deserved it. They smile cautiously at each other and Tony too broaches. So you don't date? Andrew admits, I became an MP 30 years ago before marriage and adoption and all the things that are more acceptable now than they were then. Back then, Sam Smith and Adele would have been married. Tony too smiles, yeah, but think of the Christmas album they would have put out.
Amen.
I know. I suddenly stopped and I was like filled with like a vision and I was like, why can't things be like they were back then? No, Corinne, no.
They don't have to have a fake marriage to make a Christmas album together. Just putting it out there, Adele. Sam Smith, are you listening?
Sam Smith and Adele together? You two do not need to have sex. Do not need to get married. Just make an awesome Christmas album. Thank you.
The harmonies alone would be like sex.
Oh my gosh. That would be a really amazing combination. Sam Smith, Adele, are you listening? We know that you're number one fans of ODK.
I'd feel like such shit if they're like, yeah, they've made two Christmas albums.
I know.
You dunderheads. You just haven't heard of them or don't know about them. Oh, no. Okay. Well.
Andrew smiles softly at Tony too and says, I'm glad you came tonight because you're someone worth remembering.
Our accents are all over the place.
Oh, fucking it's yes. They're worth all
it. It's all so worth it.
Fuck all over the place. They are bad. We are admitting it right here, right now. Tony too smiles the I'm texting someone I have a crush on smile. And Andrew asks him to join him in the theater. During the play, Andrew reaches for Tony's hand, which is really quite sweet. Captain Von Cash is on stage with Maria, and they are singing sweetly and facing out into the audience. Tony, too, looks at Cash and follows his gaze and sees the tractor beam between Cash and Maya, and I think senses that there is going to be some trouble afoot.
Meanwhile, Ainsley is at home reflecting on her life since she wasn't invited to The Sound of Music because Cash. And Corinne wrote, I'm just saying if my bestie had worked so hard for so long on something, you bet your bottom dollar that I'd be showing up for it. Although, Ainsley's still being pretty petty. So
yeah.
She didn't go. Anywho, yeah. Ainsley gets you upped by Garrett. And for those of you not single in this modern dating world, if a guy you ups you at night, it's code for, hey, let's together and bang if you're so inclined.
I was just thinking about how universal it is. Like, if an architect texts you, you up? He just wants to know if it's like, you're gonna have sex. If like a senator texts you, you up? Sex that's gonna get leaked to the press. Like, it's just like, you up is the male language for let's get it on. Excuse me. Let's get it on. No, that's bad. I can't Barry White. I don't have Barry White. You have Barry White in you. I do not have Barry White in me. It's a sad thing.
That was
thing.
Like Barney White.
Barry White for me, Tab. Barry White for me.
Oh, my God. Let's get it on.
Yes!
Ainsley texts back, essentially saying, it's been fun, but I'm moving on. And a mere seconds later, Garrett texts, Caroline, you up? Ainsley rolls her eyes hard and types back, still me. And any possible guilt at letting him go is alleviated. At the end of the play's reception, Maya approaches Cash and says, hey, I'm heading home, but I just wanted to say, you were great. They look at each other with hearts in their eyes, and Cash responds, thank you. He pauses a beat and then takes the risk. There's something I want to show you. And she willingly goes backstage. Fear not, gentle listeners. He is not taking her to a secret murder room. It's not that type of show. We haven't started White Lotus yet. They walk behind the stage and Cash shows her his name with the star around it, carved into ancient paint on a wall. She nods her head and says, puzzled, cool. He chuckles. I wrote this when I was 10, but I wanted to tell you how much everything you've done for me has meant to me. I know it's just community theater, but I practically lived here when I was a kid, and it's so nice to be getting to express myself in this way. Maya pish-poshes. I didn't do anything. Cash looks at her, the kiss tractor being locking on, and he insists. You did. You gave me the courage to act again, and I'm happy now because of you.
Aww.
Suddenly, Maya goes in for a kiss, and it's short and sweet. She pulls away, and Cash looks at her with lust in his eyes and rushes in for another kiss because there's no chaperones there, bitches.
Mm-mm.
And it's passionate, and it's a good one. The darkness says, I believe in a thing called love. We fulfill one of us on our heart. I believe in a thing called love. Comes on, and we... See Bash looking on at their kiss from the lighting booth. He adds a hint of romance to their kiss, pulling up a light to softly silhouette them. And to find out what happens next, you'll have to tune in next week or watch the series on Hulu or both.
Or both.
The end.
Except when it was The Darkness Is, I Believe in a Thing Called Love, it was a cover. And so it was more like, I believe in a thing called love. Just listen to the rhythm of my heart. It was...
Oh, can you go back to my rendition and insert it here, but slower, just to see what it sounds like?
I believe in a thing called love. I will see what I can do.
Perfect. Oh, it's time for the relationship rundown.
Ooh, we got some relationships to talk about this week.
Who should we start with, Corinne?
Oh, let's start with Duffy and Maya.
Okay. That's negative one for me, Corinne.
Amen. 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 Amen.
I said at the top of the show that he was acting unhinged because while he was being potentially heartbroken, but still like acting proper and trying to maintain a relationship, then he was misguided about her feelings and intentions, then found out her feelings and intentions were loving somebody else, and then just Duffy flipped the fuck out, went off the deep end. And somehow wanted everybody to pity party with him and expected his feelings to be justified to the world when everyone's like, you guys were out for like a couple of weeks. Shut the fuck up, Duffy.
Seriously. And I understand him being sad because this was his like longtime crush that didn't work. But seriously, what kind of an incel behavior is like, no, no.
Yeah. Sad, not. Friend. Trashing your best friend's apartment while he's on honeymoon sad, or neglecting your teaching responsibilities and then telling off a mom when she rightfully so complains about it.
Ugh. Yes.
And then calling her a narc. That grassed all
grassed
over
on.
You.
Yeah. You better not grass on me, Tam. You better not grass on me.
I can't make any promises because I don't know what that means. What about, since we're doing Maya, what about Maya and Cash?
Oh, curse your sudden but inevitable betrayal, but I love the two of them together. Four great kisses.
I see a bad moon arising. Oh, no. A bad Maya rising. Oh, I can't remember what happened because we watched this so long ago, but I'm just like dreading Ainsley finding out about them because you know she will ultimately.
I like how you say you watched it so long ago when it was only like a month ago that you saw it.
And you know that I have the attention span and memory of a goldfish. So there's that. And I'm having problems distinguishing one episode from the rest. And yeah, and there was probably some wine involved when we got towards the end. Anyways, it's neither here nor there.
I actually think that you're going through a stressful period in your life. And I know for me, when I go through really stressful periods in my life, my memory goes to shit.
Thank you for saying that.
Yeah.
Thank you first for shaming me and then saying that.
On the relationship roundup, we finally rate Corinne and Tamara's relationship. And right now, it's getting one dry kiss. I'm sorry.
Two and a half. Damn it.
Yeah. So Cash and Maya, yes. For you, what were you giving them?
I think I'm going to say 3.5. I think it's moving up. But like I said, there's like blood in the water. And I'm afraid for when Ainsley comes around and sniffs it out. Because I want everybody to have a happily ever after. That's my favorite type of ending.
Yes.
Yeah. How's that going to go? How's it going to go?
Well, then let's talk about it. Relationship Maya and Ains.
Oh, gosh. There's secrets. There's so many secrets going on. Oh, it's tough because Ainsley misses... I'm going to say neutral 3 with them. Ainsley still loves her bestie, misses her. Maya's goddamn lying to her left and right, but...
I don't feel like Ainsley is a safe space, though, to share things with. She's proven through her reactions that that's not so good.
I know that she loved Cash, but then there was complicated feelings around it, especially when she realized that she didn't know him all that well. But it didn't alleviate all of her feelings. They didn't magically go away.
Sure.
It's like if Larry and I, if he left me at the altar and then he started dating you and I found out, you would have to run and run fast and for a long time.
Oh, my God. I don't even want to think about that. Oh, that is so bad. Not about, like, Larry. I love Larry. He's great. But, like, just the thought of turning around and being like, oh, you left my bestie at the altar. And then, no.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Tim, our relationship is more than 2.5 dry kisses to me.
I felt that tension and heat between the two of you when he fixed your tire and he blew out and showed up at my doorstep with a flat tire.
Is that why you left us alone? That kiss tractor beam.
I was testing you. I was like peeking out the blinds. I'm testing her. If she's really my down bitch, then nothing's going to happen.
Oh my gosh. I've been watching this reality show. It's called Southern Charm. And in it, this couple, they had a christening for their child. But at the reception afterwards for the christening, the mother of the child saw the godmother of her child putting her hand on the father's leg and like stroking it. And she's like, oh, no. We're redoing the christening. I'm getting another godmother because this is not an okay situation. And then he's boyfriend, but like the father of the child is like, she just saw us through a window when she was outside, like smoking a cigarette or something. It was a misunderstanding. The godmother was just trying to get my attention. And I'm
okay.
Like,
okay,
mm-hmm. I don't go around putting my hand on people's legs to get their attention. I will just say, let me just stroke your leg, Tam, to get your attention.
No, right. I needed to speak to your husband, so I grabbed his ass. So yes. He knew I needed to tell him something, and he didn't pay attention. I just go, you know, really subtly just sucked his dick, and then he knew I meant business, and then we, you know, talked once I finished, so it was fine.
I just felt like he couldn't feel my grab through the pants, and so I put my hand down the waistband so he could feel the skin, so he would really, like, understand.
Right.
Yeah.
And then when he still was kind of like sort of getting the idea, I waggled his
wiener
up and down. Yeah. You know, much like shaking a hand, but yes. Just like, hey, to get his attention.
It's like a knocker, you know?
And then just for good measure, I jiggled his balls. Just jiggled the balls.
It's like a jing, 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 you know, that. It just brings a little magic to the occasion. That's all I'm saying. And we all need a little magic in our lives, right?
And it's perfectly reasonable. Come on now.
To bring Larry back into this conversation as one would, I think that you would find it odd if you were like in the kitchen doing something and you looked over and I was like touching, stroking like Larry's leg a little bit. She's giving me the eyes, gentle listeners. She's looking at me like, you fucking bitch. No. Back away.
First of all, that wouldn't happen. I highly doubt it. Like, when and I first started talking, we were just figuring out each other's boundaries and preferences and whatnot. So we've had very candid conversations about, like, bringing somebody else into the relationship. And he is not that we'd bring you into the relationship. I'm not saying that.
No.
When he talks about, like, any exterior anything, he's like, nope, it's just me and you, monogamy, that's what I want.
Yeah.
I don't even want to play around. Like, if you're interested in other females and want to bring that into a relationship, he goes, I'm completely against it. Not because I don't think, like, it would be bad. I just know that I would probably touch or do something or say something differently to her that would hurt you, or you would read it in a certain way. And it would just be detrimental to our relationship in some way or another. So I don't even want to play around with it.
And Larry, I think that's very smart. And also, I am not interested in any kind of sweet, sexy threesome scenario either. I was just talking about me and Larry.
Shucks,
so.
I was just waiting for us to press stop on the record. And you said there was like sexual chemistry on the last episode. I heard you. We all heard you.
More sexual chemistry than fucking Maya and Duffy. Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
Let us move on to Ainsley and Thrice Bryce.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yes, I'm like lukewarm with them. I'm like two. I know they're trying to make it a thing and there's supposed to be some heat simmering under the surface, but I just don't care still. And even though like Bryce is completely fine, it's just he almost, and I hate to say it and I'm afraid this is what's going to happen, he seems to be implanted into the writing to be a distraction for Ainsley. And it's just like Garrett was more believable than him like having something meaningful. So I don't know.
Garrett was definitely an important part of Ainsley's process for sure.
Yeah.
And I see that there could potentially be Thrice Bryce and Ains potential. However, at this moment, no, I am on the same page as you. I don't feel the spark. I don't feel the sizzle. I just feel the... They have more connection than Maya and Duffy, but that's not saying much.
And I feel a little creeped out that he was like, decorate my backyard. I don't do backyards. Well, just I trust your judgment. And then ultimately finding out that he was just stringing her along with his money to keep her around instead of just asking around on a fucking date like a real man.
Oh,
I'm going to pay to have you around, Ainsley, as long as I keep funding your renovations and your redecorations, I can have you in my life, little lady.
I'll take his money. It's fine.
I'll take his money too. Yeah. But then if I found that out when he was like, it was never about the backyard, I'm all, bitch, just ask me out. What the fuck is wrong with you?
He was getting there.
Another couple $1,000 and he for sure would have asked her out.
Well, because he gave her the kissaroo. He was getting there. Regardless, it was ill-conceived. There was more surprise and less chemistry at that point in time.
Two dry kisses.
Next couple.
I'm so curious to see if Gemma and Duffy, if anything happens between them. Because Tabby, like, I was sad for Tabby that her and Duffy didn't work out. But at the same time, I'm like, ooh, girl, you dodged a bullet, Tabby. Mm-hmm. Gemma, on the other hand, I'm like, Gemma will keep fucking Duffy in his place. Like, it's not going to be anything that happens to Gemma. Gemma's going to be like, no. We're not doing it your crazy-ass floppy-haired way. We're doing it my way because my way's right.
Yes. A.K.A. Juffy. So, Juffy, how many dry kisses do you give Juffy?
I'm giving them three based on the potential of what could happen on the horizon. I'm really hoping they're one of the weddings. I think Cash and Maya, again, I could say this and be completely like throwing darts in the dark because I don't remember. Cash and Maya are one of the weddings and then Gemma and Duffy are another. Mm-hmm. But I'm pretty sure Bash and Fatima are probably going to get married soon because arranged marriage.
Yeah.
If one of the weddings is Ainsley and Bryce, I'm going to be like, ah, shit. I'm voting for them not to wed. That's sad to say, but it's true.
Juffy, I feel like, surprisingly, at the beginning of the series, if you had told me, I would be saying, okay, my like and admiration for Gemma sort of helps mitigate my disdain for Duffy. And I kind of like the weird combination of the two of them together. Three dry kisses all the way. Yeah. We'll see what happens there.
I wouldn't have seen them together at all. I've been like, you're fucking crazy if you think they're going to wind up together. And then slowly the series has whittled away at my will and been like, guess what? Look. Oh. She's a little cheeky. She's a little bad girl. She's got some fire in her. She's not going to take his shit. Like, she can put him in his place. You wouldn't think it would work, but it oddly does, like oil and vinegar.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. And then there's Zreg, which, I mean, they're the same.
They have five dry kisses. Yeah. You guys got a great marriage. Fuck you, having sex practically at Heathrow in front of all those people and then showing your friends in their home movies, whatever.
We're not bitter. We're not bitter at all. We're fine.
I'm definitely not bitter. I am not one to be an exhibitionist.
I wasn't talking
which
about
I got
that.
Called I was out
talking
oh,
about
I know,
their
but I got
relationship. You. Yeah. So I think that we've covered just about everyone.
Yeah.
So Tam, what movie? What do we have coming up next week?
Oh my God, do we even have to ask? It's the eighth episode of this installment. So 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8.
Only three episodes left to go.
Oh, it's been a ride. It's been an absolute ride.
And if you have anything you'd like to say about the relationships that we talked about Duffy being unhinged, about Gemma claiming a place in our hearts, surprise, surprise, you can reach out to us via email at onedrykiss@gmail.com or via the social medias, Instagram and Facebook, all at onedrykiss. Mm.
And that's one spelled O-N-E. And as always, if you could find the time to rate and review us anywhere you listen to this podcast, especially if you're listening right now in front of your computer and you just happen to have your little finger handy, not doing anything at the moment, you could just rate us 5 stars. Really appreciate it. But if you're too busy or that finger is busy elsewhere, we thank you for at least stopping by this time. And we bid you adieu with one dry kiss. See you next time.
See you next time. Yay!
Okay, it's my fault that you didn't press record. That's right. I apologize profusely, my friend. Press record. And if you didn't hear me before, press record. And if you didn't hear me, press record. Press record. Okay.